This is the North Sound Energy Week podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester. Now, it's been another busy week which has seen Scottish Renewables issue a stark warning about the financial viability of their industry. A mixed reaction from consumer groups following the Energy Secretary's highly anticipated speech at the Lib Dem party conference. The Osprey Group held its final meeting in Aberdeen. Oil majors gathered for the ITF conference, and Apache made a $1.75 billion acquisition in the North Sea. Figures published on Monday at the Scottish Renewables Conference in Inverness showed the proposed 16,000 megawatts of wave and tidal projects for the Pentland Firth and Orkney waters will face annual grid charges of £56 million. Chief Executive Neil Stewart is outraged at the discrepancy in charges between Scotland and England.
The report puts into stark contrast the levels of charges for projected wave and tidal developments here in Scotland in the Pentland Firth and Orkney waters, £56 million, contrasted with £11 million in subsidies for the same levels of development in the southwest of England. Projects in the Pentland Firth and Orkney waters will be faced with some £56 million charges every year. And what that means is that's a huge barrier to investment, and it's also a danger that projects might go elsewhere where charges are more favourable. The report shows just what a huge difference there is between the north of Scotland and the south of England because of Ofgem's rules that are used to calculate charges for connection to the grid. And it also shows that it's time for significant reforms to the framework so that we can bring on more renewable energy here, our exciting new wave and tidal industry, without putting crippling charges in their way. This report shows that Scotland could lose out our world-leading wave and tidal sector, which is based very firmly in the Pentland Firth and Orkney waters, will face crippling charges of some £56 million each year compared to £11 million of subsidies in the southwest of England. And what that means is that investors are going to be very wary of putting money in here, and also that these projects could go elsewhere to where there is a more favourable charging regime. So this report shows that it's time for wholesale reform of the way we calculate connections to the grid. Scotland is home to our best renewable resources. Our wave and tidal sector is anchored firmly in the Pentland Firth and Orkney waters, yet that's the area with the highest charges and will be ultimately subsidising other forms of power, including coal, gas and nuclear in some parts of southern England. We don't think that's right, we don't think that's fair, and we think it's time for Ofgem to change the system. Scotland is absolutely the world leader in wave and tidal energy. Nowhere else has anything like our ambitions for development by 2020. But what this report shows is there's one big barrier in the way of taking those projects from the drawing board through to development, and that is these crippling grid charges, which contrast with an £11 million subsidy in the southwest of England.
North Sound Energy Week.
Then on Tuesday at the Lib Dem party conference, Energy Secretary Chris Huhne vowed to get tough on the big six energy companies. He pledged to make tariffs simpler and make it easier to switch providers.
Big energy companies can push their prices up for the vast majority of their consumers while introducing cutthroat offers for new customers. That looks to me like predatory pricing, and it will stop. We want simpler tariffs requiring energy companies to tell you whether you could buy more cheaply on another tariff.
We want to introduce powers of redress so that Ofgem can order that consumers will get money back if it turns out that one of the big energy companies has been indulging in bad practice, not just give money to the Treasury. So I'm determined to back Ofgem up.
There was a mixed reaction from consumer groups who want actions rather than words. Elizabeth Gore from Energy Action Scotland told me she hopes he follows through with his promises. Now, Elizabeth, obviously we're heading towards another cold winter and energy prices are soaring. So the Energy Secretary's speech today, it was always going to be one that was watched closely. Well, what did you make of it?
Well, we welcome the fact that amongst all the energy industry initiatives that he was discussing, that he did recognise the fact that many people are in fuel poverty, which means that they're having great difficulty in keeping warm at home and do need some assistance.
So that term, fuel poverty, what kinds of situations are people living in when you would say they're living in fuel poverty?
The official definition is that you are spending more than 10% of your income on your fuel bills in order to heat your home. But in reality, what that means is people are making very difficult choices about whether to heat their home all the time that they're in the house. They might actually decide just to put the heater on for 1 hour a day, or they're making a choice between cooking a meal and putting the heating on, or buying a new coat for their child and putting the heating on. So it's very difficult choices that people are being faced with.
And just how big a problem is this in Scotland and across the rest of the UK?
It's a growing problem, and that's the worrying thing. Official figures indicate that fuel poverty is on the up across Scotland and indeed across the UK. And we estimate that today there are around 900,000 households in Scotland. Now that's about one in three, which is a huge number of people that are seriously worried about their fuel bills.
So what action would you like to see being taken today as a result of the Energy Secretary's speech?
Well, he said that he's going to be bringing forward some new proposals to make homes more energy efficient, and we would really urge him to make sure that those schemes are very well resourced, they've got really good funding, so that we can really get to the root of this problem and get rid of fuel poverty once and for all.
And as we mentioned at the beginning, obviously with the rising energy prices and, you know, the big six energy companies never really seem to be out of the news at the moment. So he spoke a lot about making their tariffs easier to understand and it being easier to switch suppliers to get the best deal.
I think we would all welcome tariffs that are easier to follow and easier to compare. And so any action that can be taken on that has to be a good thing. We've for quite a while said that energy companies ought to have better relations with their existing customers, not just focusing on getting new customers. And one way they might be able to do that is to give a regular account review to their customers so that they can look at the tariff that you're on, the payment method that you're using, and also see if you're entitled to any extra services. And that might make it a bit simpler for people to follow what really is a very complex array of tariffs at the moment.
So really, would you say the sooner the better for the actions that were outlined today to be put into play?
It really can't wait. It's most urgent, and I think everybody now is worried about their fuel bills this coming winter, especially if it's anything like the weather we had last year. But this move by the Secretary of State has to come as soon as possible.
Oil and gas majors gathered for a summit at the AECC on Wednesday to publish the findings of the Osprey Group. The project was set up after the Deepwater Horizon disaster in the Gulf of Mexico last year. Our reporter Rebecca Curran spoke to Chief Executive of Oil and Gas UK, Malcolm Webb, about where we go from here.
Well, in this summit, I think we're reflecting back on the work of Osprey. Osprey was formed in May 2010, just after the Macondo incident, which had happened in the previous month, and it was dedicated to looking at our whole regime here in the UK for the prevention of incidents such as that and our response capability should we be faced with one of them. So it was the Oil Spill Prevention and Response Advisory Group. But what was special about Osprey was that it brought together not only the industry participants but also the regulators who were involved, and also the trade unions. And it put us all into an interesting open space where we asked ourselves the awkward questions: are we safe? Could we be safer? And what could we do to make ourselves safer? And it's been very, very performant as an organisation, I think. And it's come forward with a lot of very strong recommendations which are now being implemented. Some have been implemented. One, the obvious one, was the recommendation that the UK should have available to it a capping device that could be used to cap off any well, free-flowing well, and within a matter of days. I'm pleased to say that's now a reality. It's been designed and built in record time, and it's available here in the northeast, over at Portlethen, for deployment in the very unlikely event that it should be needed. And I think that's the other signal here. We want to make sure that that device is never used, and therefore prevention is much better than cure.
Absolutely. Now, you said there, you know, you asked yourself the awkward questions. I mean, what were the answers to the questions? I mean, what, was the UK ready before Macondo?
Yes. The first thing we had to ask ourselves was, are we safe to go on operating? Is this a safe environment? Should we pause? and not drill? So that's a difficult question, you know. And we had to ask it, and I'm pleased to say we came up with the answer to say no, we're pretty assured that the regime we've got here in the UK, and I don't mean this in a derogatory sense, but it's very different to the regime they're operating in the United States, and we were entirely happy it was fit for purpose. But then you go on to some of the other awkward questions as well, could it be better? Frankly, we decided that improvements could be made.
And it is about, you know, making sure that everyone is aware of the worst-case scenario and is prepared for it.
Yeah, there's no room for complacency. That's the real issue. We should never convince ourselves we've got, all the answers to everything. We have to keep on trying to improve our performance all the time. But we do have a very, very good record here in the UK.
Now, obviously, this Osprey was started after Macondo, but we have had a spill at home in very recent months. I mean, how do you think Shell dealt with their spill?
I think, actually, in terms of the way they dealt with the spill, I think they dealt with it very professionally, very promptly. Having said that, 200 tonnes or so of oil in the water is, I'm sure, something that Shell will feel very, very anxious about. Knowing the way that Shell operates, I know how high their standards are. It's really something we don't want to see happening, and the whole industry is dedicated to try and make sure that we can avoid those sorts of incidents.
Sitting in the conference, you know, it was quite clear that there's no passing the buck. You know, it's each regulator and each body's responsibility themselves to make sure that they're prepared for a spill.
Absolutely. This is the responsibility of each and every company operating in the UK offshore area. And no, there's no place to pass the buck. You have to be conducting a highly professional, responsible operation. And you have to do it in accordance with the rules, regulations, and the safety case regime that we operate here in the North Sea requires everybody continually look to improve their operations so that they reduce the risks to the environment or to people to as low as reasonably practicable, the ALARP principle. And everybody is required to work to that principle here.
Okay, and just probably finally, I mean, what do you think are really the main points that this report has thrown out?
I think, if I might say so, I think what this report shows, again, is the huge strength that we have here in the UK when the regulators, the industry and the trade unions all put their heads together on a common problem and look for the right sorts of solutions. I think that is actually the big lesson from Osprey. We saw it with the helicopter task group. That was the first time we engaged in such activity, and it's been proved here again in Osprey. So I think that's actually quite a big learning.
North Sound Energy Week.
Conference seemed to be the theme of the week, with industry experts gathering again on Thursday for the annual ITF Technology Conference. I spoke to Chief Executive Neil Poxon ahead of the meeting, which sets the technology agenda for the coming year.
Just to begin, really, can you explain for those who don't know a little bit about what ITF is all about?
Yeah, ITF is the Oil and Gas Industry Technology Facilitator. Our role as a not-for-profit organisation is to help identify and understand the global technology challenges that the oil and gas companies have, and then to work a process that delivers technology innovation solutions to address those challenges. And we do that using a proven and trusted process that launches something we call joint industry projects, or JIPs.
So where does tomorrow's conference fit into that?
Tomorrow's conference is the most important part of our process. It's the very first step, and that is a full-day facilitated workshop with more than 50 organisations involved, and we will discuss, debate and agree the global technology challenges that the oil and gas companies are facing. So the output of the conference tomorrow is the technology themes, if you like, that ITF will then process next year.
So really setting the agenda for the coming year.
It's setting the agenda for 2012, yes. We have more than 80 individual visitors from all over the world, and that includes visitors from Australia, Houston, and America in general, the Far East, the Middle East, etc. These are typically very high-level discipline experts from oil and gas companies, and they represent more than 50 oil and gas organizations and other organizations that have a vested interest in technology innovation within this sector.
So are there particular themes that are recurring?
There are themes that are recurring, yes, absolutely, but the themes that I believe will come up this year for ITF to focus on in 2012 are very much associated with better imaging in the reservoir, asset integrity, and anything that can be done to extend field life. So something called EOR, which is enhanced oil recovery. Decommissioning is always there on the peripheral for mature provinces like North Sea as well. Subsea is very, very critical. So all subsea-related challenges always feature. So they're probably the ones I would expect to feature with most prominence tomorrow.
Obviously, with cutting-edge technology so important, there's a funding aspect involved with ITF as well, major investment going on there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Our project portfolio at the moment consists of 47 projects that have secured more than £20 million from our member companies. So that's the major oil and gas companies. So ITF represents a huge opportunity to what we call the innovative community, whether it's here in the UK and in particular in the Aberdeen area too, to secure funding from oil and gas companies. So we're the mechanism to secure up to 100% funding for all the innovative ideas that these organizations have, as long as they address the technology challenges that our members are communicating via the conference tomorrow. It's good for Aberdeen and the surrounding area as well, because a conference like this that's attracting 50 oil and gas companies from around the world will complement the workings of other organizations in terms of maintaining Aberdeen and the surrounding region as a hub, a center of excellence for oil and gas, or even energy in general now and beyond oil and gas.
And to round off the week, American oil and gas company Apache Corporation bought assets from ExxonMobil in a deal worth $1.75 billion. The deal, which includes the Beryl field, will increase Apache's North Sea production by 54% and its reserves by around 44%. Managing Director of Apache North Sea, Jim House, told us the assets were the best it had seen in the North Sea since it bought the Forties field in 2003.
Well, this is the type of acquisition that Apache has been looking for a number of years. We were committed to grow once we made the initial entry with the Forties acquisition, which has been a very good acquisition for Apache as well as for the UK economy and the UK government. We knew that Forties was the segue that gave us the great opportunity coming in, but we've always had a view of growing out and beyond Forties and have looking for opportunities, and this one came along, and we were naturally the right company to pick because of our track record, because of our financial capability. And Exxon came directly to Apache because they knew that we could not only do the deal but also handle the associated responsibilities down the road. We recognize that being a 30 plus year asset, there will be challenges, but when we look at how Beryl has been managed over the past decade since Exxon acquired Mobil, we feel like they've done a very good job. And we look at how their organization is structured here in Aberdeen, and it's set up to properly manage an asset of this nature, of this size. And they've done, from all accounts, a very good job of being in compliance, verifying what they need to take care of, and keeping the asset in top working order. So that's benefiting us because that'll enable Apache to come in and certainly augment or take on their organization to continue doing that, but also have a view to the subsurface piece. And so our plans are to probably drill sooner there than you would on other mature assets. Beryl is about 1 billion barrels recovered to date in terms of the league tables, say. Forties is number one in total recovery of oil. Beryl is about 6. So it's a major asset. Forties was a company maker for BP, and it was a very important part of BP's history. And BP recovered well over 2.4 billion barrels from Forties by the time they sold it. But by the time they sold it, it was no longer a upper tier asset, and and you know, it was getting very mature. So it required more renovation, more upgrades than we think we're facing at Beryl. But also it had lots of running room, and with a field that has 5 billion barrels in place, that had recovered 2.4 billion barrels, there's plenty of opportunity to find certainly million barrel pockets here and there, and we've done that, and we've added well over 170 million barrels to the 145 million barrels that we paid for at Forties. So moving on to Beryl, as the headline showed, the proved reserves at the end of last year were just under 70 million barrels. So that was about half of what we bought at Forties. But we see that there's potential for enhancing that number as well. We feel like across the board we're going to need their whole organization. And we feel like their organization will complement ours. And I think in time they will be very happy to be part of the Apache team, so to speak. As I mentioned, they'd like to be geared toward operating, heavy emphasis on operating, where we're also strong on operating, but also on exploitation too. So our two teams will complement each other. There's also some gaps to be filled, so we feel like there will be hiring opportunities as well. It is a growth story.
And that's the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester.
Listen again to what you've missed and access exclusive online-only content at northsound1.com/listen again.